It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman are friends. They're the kind of friends many of us aspire to be, deeply committed and invested in each other's lives, and they clearly have a whole lot of fun together. How do we know? They host the very popular podcast Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere. But their friendship isn't perfect, and they've had to work hard to maintain their relationship as careers and life have pulled them in different directions. They're pretty famous for coining phrases, and they've come up with the perfect term for the kind of friendship they have. They call it big friendship, and they've written a book about it, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. I do need to mention that Anne Friedman grew up in Dubuque, Iowa. She is with us now. Hello, Anne. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
And Aminatou So did not grow up in Iowa, but is beloved by many Iowans. Aminatou, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us. I am so, so excited to be here. And I just want to say hello to Paula and Terry Friedman, who I know are probably going to listen to this.
That's great. If only we could all share some taco pizza to mark the occasion together. But maybe in a non-pandemic world, we can do that someday. I want to start by talking about this phrase that you use, big friendship. As I mentioned, you're somewhat famous for coming up with kind of the perfect phrase to describe different things, and we'll talk about a couple of your other phrases later on. But Anne, why don't you start? What do you mean when you say big friendship?
Yeah, when we surveyed the labels that people normally apply to a long-term friendship, we came up with things like bestie, which is honestly a term we've used. It's the tagline of our podcast. There's best friend, you know, that didn't quite fit because it implies a hierarchy. And, you know, both of us have other friends that are of equal importance to us, you know, other long running close friendships. And something like BFF just felt kind of childish for the kind of adult friendship that we're writing about. And so we wanted a new term to really describe a long-running adult serious investment in each other's lives for the foreseeable future. And big friendship is the label we gave to that.
Aminatou, flesh it out for us a little bit. When you say you needed a term for this kind of friendship, what are the elements of this kind of friendship that may be different from some of those other kinds of friendships that we would label?
Yeah, you know, Anne hinted at the fact that the vocabulary in friendship is very lacking. And what we were really trying to address is the kind of friend that is really set apart from your acquaintances or set apart from your Facebook friends or set apart even from people that you know very well but are not, you know, as deeply invested in. We are talking about the kind of friends that you want to see you through life, the person that you hope will be there on your last days. And, you know, and that takes a lot of work and it is an emotional investment in each other.
Well, and you don't live near each other. That is something that, of course, challenges a lot of friendships. If you're not in the same place, of course, we have the internet, as you point out on every single podcast, which is a great way to stay connected. But when you are far apart, you need that kind of deep investment and commitment to make this friendship work, right, Aminatou?
Yes, you definitely, definitely do. You know, we have lived far apart from each other at this point longer in our friendship than we ever lived in the same city. But we also recognize that that is true for a lot of friends. You know, anyone who moved away from home or anyone who has had to, for any number of life reasons, not be in the same city as someone that they consider their friend. And so we think, you know, the internet is definitely a tool, but in the pandemic, I think everyone is so reminded of who is in your village, you know, really. And sometimes those people do not live near you, but it really behooves all of us to find ways to stay connected.
So you have written this memoir of your friendship, and I think a lot of your listeners although you've addressed it on the show now, too. But I think a lot of your listeners were probably shocked to discover that this friendship that so many people really aspire to and look up to and admire has not always been easy. Anne, why did you decide that you wanted to share this story with people?
Well, for one thing, we think there's power in specificity. And so really talking about the ins and outs of our friendship is for us just a way to inspire conversations between other people about the joys and pitfalls in their own long-running friendships. So that was one motivation. We just could get closer to this story than any other story. You know, using ourselves was helpful that way. But I also think, to your point about how our listeners might be surprised that everything has not always been easy between us, that's also something we wanted to normalize. That if you are in an intimate friendship, if someone really knows you well and you know them in very, very deep ways, it's likely that you are going to hurt each other sometimes. It's likely that you're going to have to work on periods when you are feeling not so connected to each other. And by sharing those parts of our story, we really wanted to normalize the work that goes into a friendship like this. It's not all reaping the benefits and the fun stuff, you know? Sometimes it means having hard conversations.
Aminatu, have you had listeners send you messages and say, wait, I feel betrayed by this. I thought everything was perfect.
You know, not yet. I don't believe that we've had any of those, you know, and but I think that it's because it's very recognizable. I think that anyone who has deep, lasting relationships, whether they are friendships or not, really understands that, you know, it requires extending yourself in a way that is not always amazing all the time, you know, and that's what makes it worth it.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of your friendship, and it plays out kind of like a love story. You met in Washington, D.C. when you were both in your 20s. And Aminatu, I mentioned already that Anne grew up in Dubuque, Iowa. You grew up mostly in Nigeria, and you came to the United States for college. So you were new to the country, but then also new to Washington, D.C. Tell me about your life when you and Anne first met.
Oh, man. Yeah. As you mentioned, I am not from Iowa. I had always wanted to live in Washington, D.C. ever since I was a young person. I had really just fallen in love with the idea of living in America and living in D.C. And so I moved to the United States for college, and then after 4 years in Texas, went to D.C., you know, and life was really just starting for me. I think that we were in a recession. There was, job opportunities were not great. And so my free time really was very free. And there was a lot of room in my life to just meet someone new and to make a friend. I think that feeling of just like being new in town and feeling very overwhelmed by, the prospect of loneliness is something that was a huge motivating factor for me.
Well, and Anne, I'll let you take the first stab at your meeting story, which does sound a little bit like it's out of a romantic comedy. Again, not a romantic relationship, but it's such a great story. Anne, tell me how you first met.
Well, I had known this incredible woman named Dayo Olapade for about, I don't know, a year and a half or so. And she had dinner with Aminatu one night, and within hours of meeting her was like, you really need to meet my friend Anne. The two of you would hit it off. And so she and I kind of devised a plan. She was really the initiator, that we would get together and watch television at her house. It was a time when not all of our friends had cable. It was a special thing to have access to all the shows that we wanted to watch. And so we had to gather in living rooms together. And so we got together and watched the prom episode of a teen soap opera called Gossip Girl. And from the minute we met, you know, we sat down near each other and just laughed at all each other's jokes. Thought each other's comments were the funniest. I loved what she was wearing. And the rest is history.
Aminatu, did you know that you were being set up? I mean, this sounds like some matchmaking was going on.
Oh, it was 100% matchmaking. Our friend Dyer is truly a very generous person. I had just met her, and truly the second time ever that I hung out with her was that time at her house. And so I walk into a room full of strangers to me at this point, but I knew that Dyer really wanted me to meet Anne. So, you know, I showed up ready to play ball, and we really connected and had a great, great time.
So tell me about that spark when the two of you first met. Aminatou, I'll let you go first this time. But what was it that created that connection?
You know, I think that it cannot be understated that an endorsement from someone that we both really liked and respected was really at the root origin of what that spark was. Because I think that in trying to set us up, Dyer was really signaling, you know, that we had similar tastes, we might have similar values, we enjoy the same things. And, you know, so there was a lot of just safety there in doing it, because someone else I really liked was endorsing this, you know. But I think that you are also really hinting at this aspect of some friendships, not all friendships, that is true. And I think that it also happens in a lot of other, you know, contexts. When you meet people, you have an undeniable spark at the beginning, you know, where you are charmed by each other, you are taken in by each other's words and what you look like and what you're saying. And, you know, and I think that part of the reason that we share the story really like a meet cute, I think, is to remind people that, you know, romantic relationships are not the only ones that can enjoy this kind of, you know, like headiness and feelings. And also friendships are relationships where it is worth asking people, how do you know each other? Because that is a question that friends do not always get. And, you know, our story is really fun and powerful. And that is true of a lot of other friendships.
Well, and you write a lot about those first weeks, first months of your friendship and, you know, almost an obsession with each other and coming up with reasons to be together and to get to know more about each other. And we will talk more about that in just a moment. We are going to take a short break. We will be back to talk more about Big Friendship with Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow. They have written the book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close, and they are the co-hosts of the podcast, Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere. We also want to hear from you. Tell us about your big friendships. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about friendship, but the kinds of friendships that go beyond just enjoying spending time with somebody, the kinds of friends that are there for you through thick and thin, and maybe even people that you've had a hard time maintaining your relationship with over the years, but you've invested because it's worth it. That's the kind of friendship that my guests call big friendship. Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow are the co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere, and they have written a memoir of their friendship called Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. We also want to hear about your big friendships this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And just before the break, we were talking about that sort of infatuation period in a friendship. And that's the time when it's easy to be friends. You just want to be together. And maybe there's that nervousness at first of, do they want to be with me as much as I want to be with them? Am I as cool as they are? You know, all of those things. But that's a really heady, enjoyable period in any friendship.
It's true. And, you know, I think it looks a little bit different in every friendship. You know, for us, I don't think there was a lot of uncertainty about how much time we wanted to spend with each other. We both really just dove in and we had a lot of time to give to each other at that point in our lives. But we both have other friendships that really, you know, that period was a little more drawn out, or we spent those hours together, but it took a little longer to tally them up. And, you know, but it's undeniable that in that early stage, it wasn't just hours together. We were really being vulnerable with each other and sharing a lot of ourselves and building a foundation for this friendship that really that set us up for the long term.
Well, and you were in your 20s. I think we make friends differently in different parts of our lives. We have some wonderful comments here. This is from Gabby. She says, I met my best friend, Michelle, when we were in kindergarten. She knows my history. All my best childhood memories include her. We've both lost parents. We're raising our kids 16 years apart, but our kids loved each other instantly. We haven't lived in the same town since high school, but we make time to reconnect. And it's always like we have never been separated. So with those childhood friendships, you know, the things that you have in common are simpler, and those friendships can develop over time, and maybe you grow apart or maybe you grow toward each other. But when you meet in your 20s, I mean, you were both bringing a lot of different life experiences. But in those early days, Aminatou, both of you were so focused on the things that you did share, on your sameness.
Oh, I love this story from your listener. I think that it really gets to the root of what we are talking about. You know, someone who just really knows you and they know your history and they truly are a witness to the life that you are living and know you so intimately. I think that you are correct in noting that Anne and I met in our 20s, you know, but it's not an accident that a lot of the early conversations that we had was about who we were as children and who we were in our families and how we had grown up. And that's something that, you know, I think everyone is always trying to close the gap between that childhood self and the self that you are now as an adult. We were really focused also on our similarities because, you know, it's exciting to know that you can make a friend from halfway around the world from you and you share things in common. I think so many people want to do that. You want to really focus on the things that are the same because it makes you feel validated.
And we have a number of people who want to join the show to share their stories, and I want to get to the phones in just a second. But you guys are actually also collecting these stories of big friendships for the Call Your Girlfriend podcast, right, Anne?
Yeah, we are doing a series of episodes about big friendship this summer, and we have been asking our listeners to leave us voicemails about their friendships and tell us some stories about how they met and, more importantly, how they've stayed close.
So people can find out more information on how to share those stories with you guys at the Call Your Girlfriend website. But
callyourgirlfriend.com.
All right. Share your stories with us right now at 866-780-9100. Laura is on the line in Lone Tree. Hi, Laura.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for calling. Tell me about how you met your best friend.
We were both in our 30s already. I shouldn't say this. Maybe Susan was a little older than that. But our kids were in after-school program together. Our kids were friends, and we hadn't met. And one day when I went to get my son, there was word that this woman, her ride for her son had fallen through, and she was actually in a small town south of town. And I said, well, I can take him home. He's friends with my son. And poor thing, she was on a couch with her knee in a contraption that kept moving it back and forth so that she wouldn't get cartilage, scar tissue around it. And yeah, I know. It was just, and I can't even tell you what made us hit it off. And it was an eye-opener to realize we've been friends for over 30 years. Our sons are in their mid-30s now.
Wow. And yeah. So you were brought together in some ways, it sounds like maybe because she really needed a friend in that moment.
Yeah, she needed some help right then. But it's gone back and forth over the years how we've helped each other.
Tell me about some of the things that you've gone through together.
Within a couple of years of becoming friends, she had become a widow shortly before we met. I ended up getting divorced within a couple of years and actually separated for quite a long time. And the years that I was separated, we really spent a lot of time together. It wasn't the same as being widowed, but we had those similarities that came from both raising our children, you know, without full-time helpers.
Absolutely.
And then through my remarriage, and I'd say in some ways that's something that could have been more of a trial to a friendship than than other things we've been through, because that was, you know, a major change in my life, and I moved out of the Iowa City Coralville area. Even though it's only a few miles, it makes it harder to get together. But she approved. She approved of my husband, which is, you know, a wonderful thing. Stood up in our wedding. I don't know. She's just done so much for me. I love that she's interested. We had common interests, but she's interested in so many things, and she's so smart and willing to spend time learning about things. And that really inspired me. She got me into volunteering out at the Iowa Medical Classification Center, something I never would have thought of doing on my own. So she's really enriched my life.
Oh, well, Laura, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. You can share your story at 866-780-9100. And I think Laura gets to one of the big concepts that you write about in Big Friendship, and that is the stretch, really being there for your friends. Aminatu, tell us what you guys mean by stretch.
I was getting so emotional listening to Laura's story. That is so lovely. You know, Anne and I coined this language in our book about stretching for a friend, and it's really trying to acknowledge the truth that in friendship, you are going to have to, it requires a kind of nimbleness of both of you, because you are constantly having to do things that sometimes you are not familiar with or not comfortable with. And then, you know, on top of that, there is also just the give and take that is natural in every relationship. Sometimes you are the one that is being stretched because things are asked of you, and other times you are the one that is stretching. And that is normal in any kind of, you know, two-person engagement, really. And we don't believe that, you know, friendship is transactional, or that you're supposed to be keeping a log of, okay, I did this for that person, now they're doing this for me. We just think that over a lifetime, both people really have to feel that they got as much as they asked for, and, you know, and as much as they have taken also. So I love hearing in Laura's example, really an acknowledgement, you know, of a friend that has been there for her through a lot of things. And that is something that I know it's true in my relationship with Anne as well.
And that's, as you're pointing out, Aminatu, and you guys write about this in your book, I mean, there will be different seasons of life where one friend maybe has to do more giving for this period of time, but in a friendship, it balances out because you're both deeply invested, even if there's not necessarily, as you say, a transactional relationship, but because of the commitment that you have to each other, it feels balanced. Is that what you're saying?
I think over the long term, it does. You know, sometimes in real time, it doesn't always feel balanced. It can feel like, you know, I'm the only one stretching for this friendship again and again. or it can feel like a strain, you know. It is something that we really encourage people to talk about, and saying, like, I am actually extending myself for this friendship because I want to be in it for the long term. And I know that you are going to someday have to extend yourself for me. And, you know, sometimes having the conversation about it a little more openly can kind of diffuse those feelings of, I'm giving to this again, that inevitably crop up when we are busy and there are a lot of demands. You know, our best selves want to stretch for our friends. And I think it's something that is easier if we're all talking about it.
Well, I want to bring up another one of the phrases that you have coined, probably your best known phrase, and something that a lot of other people have co-opted and stolen and used in all kinds of different ways. But because it's such a beautiful concept, Anne, can you describe the shine theory that you and Aminatu came up with?
Yeah, shine theory has its roots in something that we for years have said to each other in private in our friendship, which is, I don't shine if you don't shine. It is this idea that we are invested in each other in the same way that we are invested in ourselves for the long term. It's about being mutually invested. And, you know, bigger than that, it is about prioritizing collaboration with someone over competing with them. One reason this term has resonated so much with women in particular, and really with anyone who maybe doesn't see themselves reflected in the halls of power or in the leadership of, you know, the industry that they work in, is that we've really been taught that women are competitive and we are clamoring against each other for one seat at the table, and you know, we cannot all succeed together. And Shine Theory really kind of directly takes issue with that and says, we can all get further. We can all be our best selves if we do it together, collaboratively.
So a modern kind of female friendship, I think you write both beautifully in the book about some of the iterations of female friendship, some dark periods for female friendship over the years. And this is something that has been embraced by a lot of women. Have you also seen men embrace this idea? I'm curious. We do have some men who've shared some friendship stories, but it's in response to my request for stories, it's almost overwhelmingly women. Aminatou, have you also had men embrace the Shine Theory?
I mean, we certainly have men in our lives who practice Shine Theory with us. It is not exclusive to only women. Like, I can think of so many men that I am friends with, or men that I've met, or men that I've worked with who have, you know, told me their salary information, or who have helped me strategize for a job, or who have made room for me and other people who were not men to be able to ascend to more powerful positions at work. I think that, you know, the truth is that women, there is more latitude in society for women to be vocal about this kind of stuff, but we would love to see and hear more men share their stories of how, you know, this is resonating with them.
You can share your story of one of your big friendships at 866-780-9100. With me this hour, Aminatou So and Anne Friedman, authors of Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. And we have another Anne on the line from Portland. Hello, Anne.
Hi.
Hi. What's your story?
Well, I am 63 years old and met a fabulous group of women when we were all 18. It's been 45 years ago. I had to do the math, but yes, it's been that long. In the halls of Clark College, now Clark University, in Dubuque. And these women, there was a group of us that just really, really clicked. And there was a larger group and smaller groups and everything within this, but there was something that was very, very special about the group of friends that we all shared our college years together at Clark. And when I read Big Friendship, I definitely recognized the spark that Anne and Aminatou wrote about, because I felt that with these women. I will add that one of these women is actually the mother of Anne Friedman, the author. So she is certainly a great inspiration for friendship. But we lost touch for many years after graduation. There might have been an occasional Christmas card or something like that, an occasional reunion. But over recent years, we've become a lot closer. We got together for the 40th anniversary of our graduation from Clark a few years ago, and just really, really renewed things. And since the pandemic has begun, we Zoom every Friday afternoon, and I look at those other five faces on my Zoom screen, and I just have such a sense of connection and such a sense of comfort and such a sense of sustainment getting through this time of uncertainty and political unrest. And I look at those five faces that I connected so strongly with as an 18-year-old, and I just think things are going to be okay. We're going to get through this. There are things that last. Big friendships last. And we were all early enthusiastic readers of the Big Friendship book. And I don't think we ever thought of our connection as a big friendship, but we certainly do now. We recognize what it is. And we might be talking about hip replacements instead of hangovers, but it's a connection that while it was stretched and not as present in our lives for many of the intervening years, it is still there. It's never been lost. And I really thank the authors that you have on today for reminding us just how important those friendships are.
Oh, Anne, thank you so much for your call and for sharing your story. And there is a lot of power in that term, big friendship. I loved hearing that from Anne. And Anne Friedman, can you respond to that? I mean, putting a name on this, it makes it easier to understand what we're experiencing.
It's so true. You know, naming things is very powerful. And, you know, that is a belief that Aminatou and I share that really runs through our work is, you know, describing and naming things that maybe everyone is experiencing or maybe a lot of people are experiencing helps to give them the weight that they really hold in our lives. And I also have to say, listening to Anne's call, shout out to the Clarkies, I love this, that, you know, both of us, both Aminatou and I, come from families where our parents are very invested in staying connected to people, you know? Like, I'm positive my mother sent out those invitations to the 40th anniversary gathering, you know? Aminatou's parents, like, really invested a lot of time in staying in touch with far-flung people. And so, you know, they really modeled for us. Yeah. It takes work.
We're going to have to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Anne Friedman and Aminatou So. They are the authors of Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. And we will continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me this hour are Anne Friedman and Aminatou So. They are the co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere. And they have written a memoir of their friendship. It's called Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. And they have coined that term, Big Friendship, to describe the kind of enduring friendship that they have, where they have been there for each other through thick and thin. And even when things were bad, they were committed to keeping the relationship and investing in it for the future. You're welcome to join our conversation with your stories about your big friendships. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this comment from Sonia. She says, my best friend Rachel lives in my hometown of Brisbane, Australia. We became best friends at 9 years old when she was new at school, and I felt sorry for her eating her crumbly homemade bread sandwiches with cucumbers in them. We shared boyfriends and secrets, married the same year, and I helped her when her postpartum depression became so bad that she admitted herself to a facility because she was suicidal. She helped me many times with creative encouragement as an artist, despite being across the world from each other. It doesn't matter how many years we might have in between seeing each other, we always pick back up as if we'd never been apart and we're giggly girls again. We never run out of things to talk about and are soulmates. I just wish we lived closer. Such a wonderful story. And I do want to talk, though, about the times that were not so great. There, you were living and still are living far apart. Aminatou, you're in Brooklyn. Anne is in Los Angeles. And there was a period of time in your friendship that, in spite of the fact that you were hosting the podcast together, you were doing that together every week, there had been several things that had gone wrong over the years that had kind of added up and really hurt your intimacy and your ability to trust each other, to lean on each other. You don't have to give us all the details, but Aminatou, maybe you can tell us just a little bit about what things were like during that time.
Yeah, you know, I think we went through this period of just really missing each other and misunderstanding each other and not communicating well with each other. There was not some big dramatic event in, you know, in some ways, if there had been, that would have been a lot easier to just say, oh, hey, this does not feel good, or one of us has misbehaved in a specific way, and then you can address the big hurt. But what happened is a very, now we know something that is very common where you kind of just start growing apart because there are things that you are not talking about. And, you know, over a couple of years, a couple of things had felt off to us, or we had, you know, there was like awkwardness and communication. And basically, if enough of that happens or enough of that accumulates, then you realize that the things you feel safe and comfortable talking about become so much smaller compared to all the silences that are possible in a relationship. And, you know, the two of us work together, so we have to talk to each other every single day. And it took us a really long time to also to understand that something was wrong. It's not because we were being facetious with each other. We were really ignoring what was going on. I think that, there is also a feeling when you are friends with someone that, oh, is this even a conversation that I can have with them? Or is this okay to bring this up? Does this make me dramatic? Am I making a big deal out of this? in a way that you perhaps would not, you know, with someone who was in your family, or that you would not with someone who was your romantic partner or your spouse, because you know that in those relationships, you have to address immediately anything that is wrong. But we certainly did not feel empowered to do that in our friendship. And, you know, after a couple of years, realized that we actually had to talk about it, or the relationship was not tenable anymore.
Well, and that's a point, as you describe that, I can think of friends that I've had those periods of time with, and we're not so close anymore. I mean, that's a point where a lot of friendships fade away. And do you feel like the fact that you were coworkers, is that what made you not let go of this relationship? Or why do you think you and Aminatou got to the point where you said, you know, we have to fix this?
Oh, that's a good question. I think there were a lot of things that made me want to stay in this friendship. You know, some of them having to do with just how much I care about Aminatou and how much I value her presence in my life. Even when things were bad, I couldn't really imagine a long-term future without her in it. It was almost inconceivable. But you're correct that the fact that we worked together really provided this opening where it forced us to have some conversations that we might otherwise not have had. And in particular, you know, there was one conversation where we were talking about a work opportunity that involved us spending more time together in this kind of structured work way. And we were able to admit to each other that our friendship wasn't strong enough for us to kind of take on more of a working relationship. And from that conversation, we really were able to acknowledge that we had both been trying to fix the friendship in our own clumsy ways. We had been failing to do that repeatedly, despite the best intentions, and that maybe we should get someone else to help us repair this emotional connection.
And you did that. You actually got into therapy together, one missed dart, and then you found a different therapist that you could work with. I mean, that did that feel extreme? I know that Aminatou, in the book, you talk about how when Anne suggested therapy, you knew that this was serious.
I mean, when someone who is raised Iowa Catholic considers going to therapy, I think we all know it's very serious. And we should take that to heart. I think you know, Anne is correct. We were both trying to figure out how to stay connected, and we couldn't. And then we started looking for, okay, what does this kind of repair work look like in other contexts? And because we were coworkers, I think that we were really aware that, you know, if someone's company is not doing great, they have access to coaching, or they have access to mediation. And, you know, while our problem was not related to work at all, it gave us an opportunity to think a little bit outside of the box and to figure out like what kind of support we needed. But, you know, I will say, it feels, even saying it to you right now, I'm like, wow, that seems really dramatic. I cannot believe we did that. We definitely did not tell a lot of people while we were doing it, because it seems very out there. But, you know, I am really proud that we did it, because we would not be talking to you today. But also, I think that, you know, if you, for as dramatic as it sounds, or just as out there and radical as it sounds, you know, I just cannot imagine having let go of this friendship without trying every single thing to fix it. And I think that is something that is worth considering.
I want to get back to the phones. Diane is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Hi, tell us your story.
Okay. Yes, I met my friend Bonnie in high school, and we became good friends. We went off to college, different schools and everything, but we stayed friends. And then for a while, we were at the same school. We both got married, and we each had two daughters. Her daughters were a little bit older than mine, but we always stayed. We were lucky, too, that we were in the same town. So we always got together for birthdays and some holidays and different celebrations and everything. So we both had similar jobs, even though we didn't work for the same place, but our jobs were kind of, we both were kind of like program coordinators and had similar jobs. And so we stayed best friends. in her 50s, Bonnie got breast cancer, and she came through that just fine, and we thought everything was okay. She retired at age 62, and unfortunately, the cancer came back. Oh. And she lived about 5 more years, and she passed away in 2013. It's something that she was my best friend for so many years. It just has left like a hole in my heart. And I have other friends, but it's just not the same. And so, you know, I try to think, well, is this person, could they take the place of Bonnie? But then I just finally realized that nobody can take the place of her. And you know, it's just the way it was. Yeah. And so anyway, I just think that's something that we were friends for over 50 years.
And, that's remarkable, Diane. What a special thing to get to share with someone. I mean, your whole lives together.
Yes, yes, yes. And so in that sense, we were very fortunate. And she was a remarkable person. Everybody loved her. Absolutely everybody loved her. One of her favorite symbols was like the heart. And, you know, she was just full of love. And so I was fortunate, you know, in that sense to have her as my best friend, right. I think. But I just
but
wanted to share that.
It hurts so bad to lose her. Diane, thank you so much. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for letting me share it.
Thanks for calling. And what a beautiful, beautiful story of friendship. I mean, there's so much pain there, but we talked about friendship goals earlier. The two of you are friends that many people aspire to be. I aspire to have a friend like that. I mean, that's just lovely. Aminatu, do you want to respond to Diane's story?
Oh, Diane, thank you so much for calling and for telling us your story. I am really teary-eyed over here. You know, 50 years together, I cannot even imagine. And I think that, you know, that depth of emotion that Diane is really tapping into in her friendship with Bonnie is what we are, you know, what we are really trying to talk to. Like, the greatest love of your life can be your friends, and losing them is incredibly painful, you know? And I think that as a society, we also do not have good ways of recognizing that, you know, of saying to someone, I am sorry that someone who was so deeply important to you is gone. And grieving a friend is, you know, it's something that I think we should all think about a lot more, about how we want to do that in ways that honor the person who is gone, but also the friend who remains, because I think that not being able to talk about it adds to so much of that pain as well.
In writing this book, you talk about searching for information on friendship. You both are quick to go to research when you have a problem in life, I think, like so many of us. And so when you were having your difficulties, you were looking for resources. How do I fix this? How do I make my way through this? And you really didn't find a lot of it. I'm sure that your book will be a guide for a lot of people going through that. But it feels like one of your conclusions is just that we don't value friendship enough as a culture. And do you think that's fair?
I think that's true. And if we did value it more, there would be more support for fixing a friendship, for, you know, supporting friends who are grieving the loss of a friend, for making friends a more official part of your life. You know, if you wanted to have a friend be named in your will, or be, you know, your medical proxy, something like that. Or bring a friend as a plus one to a wedding. You know, normalizing these ways of recognizing the people who are important to us can be friends is something that we would love to see happen. And truly, that starts with recognizing friendship as this, you know, big, deep, complex relationship that is not just a fun thing that you have when you're a kid, but like something that requires work and investment and can really sustain you for your whole life.
Let's get one more caller, and this is Kathy on the line in Mason City. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
Tell us your story.
Well, I'm telling you my age, but that's okay. I have a 68-year-old friendship with my friend named Pam. We met in 1952 when we started kindergarten together. And it was a small town, and so we were in the same class for 18, 19 until we graduated when we were 18. had a great class, a very close class. After graduation, we went to college for 1 year together, and then she got married. I stood up for her at that wedding. And then as things do happen, she went one way and I went another. She ended up in California. I stayed in Iowa. And for 35 years, we really didn't speak to each other. We didn't communicate. And then in 2005, for our 40th class reunion, she called me. And she said, "Kathy, are you coming to the reunion?" I thought, "Oh, it's Pam." And we started to talk after 35 years as if we'd seen each other yesterday.
Wow.
It was just the most amazing thing. And ever since then, for the last 15 years, since that 40th class reunion, she's in California and I'm in Iowa. But I've gone out there and she's come back to Iowa many times. And it's just like we were back in 1952 bonding again. And we've had some amazing experiences.
Oh, Kathy, that's so wonderful. We're nearly out of time, but thank you so much for sharing that story. And I think Aminatu and Anne, when I hear a story like that, I do think of your friendship, but you guys have decided that you're not going to take several decades off. You want to be together now, and you're willing to make it happen. What do you want people to take away from reading your story, just briefly, Aminatu?
I think we want people to take away that friendship is deeply, 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 deeply important in our lives, in all of our lives, and that it would serve us all better to recognize that instantly, you know, and also to be open to the possibility that friendship is deep and long and complicated, but truly is rooted in love, you know, and that it makes us better human beings. It makes us like more whole. And we hope that people would really hang on to that.
Anne, anything you want to add?
Yeah, we hope this book is an invitation to people to take a look at their own friendships, connect more deeply with the friends they have, forge deeper friendships with new people, maybe, and just generally take this relationship as seriously as it deserves to be taken.
Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Anne Friedman and Aminatu So, they are the authors of Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. They are also the co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend, a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere. And if you want to share your big friendship stories with them, you can go to callyourgirlfriend.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.